from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Well, you hear that? You know that is Earth, Wind, and Fire, of course. A little Earth, Wind, and Fire is always good for your soul. We try and give you a little soul food, get you started on this Thursday morning. But City Limits, whenever we start with that song, it also means what?
It's just you today.
It's just me today. I kind of knew that we would be here. Not kind of knew, but I mean, yesterday Joe was sick, right? He was hacking and wheezing and in between breaks complaining that he had a cold and all the other good stuff. And so this morning, let's just say we all got thrown for a loop when Joe had to call off sick. And so that means City Limits, the heavy lifting for this show, but it's on me and it's on you.
That's right. We can bear the responsibility and wish Joe all the best. Hope he's okay.
And we hope he does. I guess he's got to go get his doctor.
Yes, he was seeing the doctor. He just texted me not too long ago. He said that he is not feeling very well.
Well,
he needs something to cheer him up.
That's not good at all. Obviously, the Pirates did not cheer people up last night.
No.
You know, this is the thing about 162 games, City Limits. When we go back, you point to certain games that, you know, you feel like the Pirates stole. Maybe even the two days prior to last night.
Yeah,
and then it evens it out when you give up four hits. Four hits. You have not, what, they had 9 or 10 hits or whatever they had themselves. And you lose. And you lose because you make four errors. The most egregious error, of course, the one that everyone's talking about, was O'Neal Cruz, who decided he was going to try and play left field along with playing shortstop. And that really is where the game probably was lost. It's the kind of game that you say, well, hey, you know, when you're fighting for a playoff spot, you can't afford to lose those kind of games. But again, I think the beauty of baseball in 162 games is your record is what it should be at the end of the season. You know, football, you have 2 or 3 games where breaks go your way or don't or whatever. That can have a huge impact. But 162 games, you probably are what your record says you are. You know?
Yeah.
Because there are some games where, I mean, look, the night before, the Astros kicked the ball all over the field, you know, and it's just a part of it. So that being said, it's a bad loss at a bad time. There's no sugarcoating, really, if you think about it. There's just no sugarcoating the loss from the standpoint of if you just make the plays you're supposed to make, you win the game.
Well, and especially because, well, here we go again. St. Louis wins. The Padres win again. The Mets lost. But everybody in front of you continues to win. And Milwaukee lost. So you had a chance to gain another game on the Brewers. You're five games back in the divisional race. And it's just frustrating and unfortunate. But, yeah, I do think there are... Maybe to an extent, the games do cancel each other out. There, it does seem like for the Pirates, it's been more so these type of losses that has held them back this year than the type of wins that we see on Monday that propel them into more of a positive direction. So that's, I think, the more frustrating thing about it. Did you hear Joe Block's call of the O'Neill Cruz error?
No, do we have it?
If you thought that you and I were frustrated about the error, this is what Joe Block had to say.
Oh, and if you take that 105-mile-an-hour ball off of stand.
A swing and a fly ball down the long run for Reynolds. Cruz goes back on it, and he gets in Reynolds' way, and that's going to allow a run to score. What's Cruz doing? That's not his ball. Then he throws it away. What is he doing?
There are some
what's he doing, Paul?
Yeah, what is he doing? Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's it. That's become Neil Walker's signature phrase.
There's two other plays in Pirate history that I can think of, recent Pirate history, that rival the O'Neill Cruz debacle last night. Obviously, Will Craig. Yes.
It's not as bad as the Will Craig play. That stands
play,
on its own.
It's close. And then that, oh, no, the Grandal, yeah. The Grandal from his knee, soft tossing the ball back while somebody's stealing home.
If you had to rank the three, I think it would be number one, Will Craig.
Craig.
Number two. Well, the problem is Cruz committed two errors on that play.
Yes.
First, the ball drops in. Then he has another throwing error. And then Houston responds with a double next batter.
Right.
And it cuts it to a one-run game where the two-run home run that was given up by Holderman would have just made it a tie game, whatever. Maybe not even that. I mean, Cruz catches the ball. You're walking off the field with a sweep. And that's the ultimate difference when you can be four games over instead of two games over where you're, you know, staring down the barrel of San Diego, Arizona still. I mean, you still are.
Right.
But the margin is so razor thin right now when those teams continue to win ball games. And I get that Arizona and San Diego are on the schedule. San Diego twice in the next 2-3 weeks. But, man, that was a golden opportunity that was squandered.
And all of a sudden, to me, you know, this is, you know, we had some arguments last week when they played they win 2 out of 3 against the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
And people acted like it was the biggest series, the greatest series of the season and how important. And yeah, every game's important. But guess what? They won 2 of 3 from the Cardinals, and a week later, they're a game behind the Cardinals. So this thing where every series is the biggest series they've ever played, they've got to win every game they can win, you know, and they've got to continue to try and win series and do that. But you know what? They sweep. Who do they play next? Arizona? They say they sweep Arizona.
That would be huge.
And then they lose to the Padres, right? And then they lose the next series. Well, you're right back where you started.
Yeah, you're in the same spot.
So my point is, every game is big, and that's what I love about the Pirates right now. Every game is important. Every single one. And every game, listen, we come in here, and I've said this a few times, in pretty much every year that I can remember that I've worked at this station, which is I got here as a part timer maybe a month and a half, 2 months after it started, right? So I don't know, what's that, 12 years, however many long years we've been on the air.
2010.
This is in July, this week, right now, we would start the show talking about, I don't know, whatever the hell happened at Steeler Camp.
Second day of padded practice, yeah.
But instead we start every day talking about the Pirate game from the night before. Because they are in a playoff chase, and it's meaningful baseball.
Yeah, it's a good thing that we're as frustrated as
Absolutely.
We are, because we're frustrated for the right reasons.
Absolutely.
Not because this team is 20 games under 500 and can't get out of their own way.
Right. It's just what it is. And I think that's the most important thing to me, is that we are talking about it and we're upset about it for a reason. because every one of these games is meaningful and every one of these games counts. You know, that's the key with this whole thing. Every day we've got something that we're looking for out of the Pirates. So, and by the way, a little footnote, I thought, at least, is that Brian De La Cruz got two hits last night and scored a run. So that is something to be excited about, really, if you think about it. It's something to be excited about is that, hey, here's a guy that comes in and he's just, you know, swinging the bat. If he's able to hit and be a consistent hitter, then he will have done what he's told.
Yeah, he had some pretty good at-bats. I mean, kind of struggled with the curveball. It was kind of evident
right
whenever Framber Valdez was throwing that. But, I mean, he was able to get on base for the first run of the game for when Joey Bart hit another blast. What's up with the Pirates and hitting absolute tank shots to the train? I mean, did you see Thritt's three home runs?
Right.
That have been absolutely mashed. Right. Two by Taylor, one by Bart that would have been out of the actual stadium.
It's pretty amazing that, but, you know, Michael White Taylor's at-bats now are becoming far more interesting than they were.
They're not automatic outs at this point.
So, anyway.
We got the Noah Constrictor as well from Houston who was there last night.
Right. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing to me when it comes to everything else. Let's talk to Noah right now. Hi, Noah.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Good. Good. You're not necessarily last night you didn't actually, like, run out to left field to try and play someone else's position, did you?
No. I know that was in the air, though, but I didn't catch that bug, fortunately.
I mean, you know, I don't even know where to begin with that whole thing. How does that happen?
The explanation that O'Neill provided us with And I think I'll go with the explanation that we both got from both Shelton and O'Neill. Shelton just kind of said O'Neill had been struggling this series, and when a younger player will struggle, sometimes they try to do too much. And I think that is a very accurate way to summarize how O'Neill Cruz played defense yesterday. I felt like he was doing way too much and trying a little too hard, and he got in his own way. And on that specific play, I asked him, I said, you know, could you hear Reynolds calling for the ball? And he said, I could originally, but as they got closer to the foul line, that's where you hear the fans a little bit more. And their communication kind of got lost in the comes from the stands, which is still inexcusable. I mean, you're a big league player. That's a play that shortstops and left fielders have to communicate to make 100 times out of 100. That's a routine play. But these are just things that are going to come with O'Neill Cruz right now at this point in his career. You're going to get the good, which we've seen. I mean, he's been their second best hitter this year. He's second on the team in home run. He's come up in many clutch moments at the plate. And then you're going to get the bad. You're going to get series like this series in Houston, where aside from his one game-tying hit Monday night, he was pretty bad this whole three-game set in Houston.
Yeah. You know, I think that is it time, Noah? Is there a time in the off season where they need to talk about a different position for O'Neill Cruz?
I don't think they would be above that idea. I know that they tried to move him to the outfield previously, and I don't think it went well. I don't think that he fully embraced it. And I don't think, like, the Pirates were completely set on the idea of him doing it. But now that they're in a different position as an organization. You know, this is a team that's actually competitive now and should be competitive for the next couple of years, at the very least. And we've seen what this guy at shortstop looks like now, where beforehand, when they were trying to move him to the outfield as a minor leaguer, we didn't know what shortstop O'Neill Cruz in the major leagues would look like. So I think at the very least, they'll revisit the idea in the offseason. I don't know how far it will go. But when you look around, I mean, they've got a lot of middle infielders. They've got actually some decent defenders, and especially with some of the guys they just acquired, like Kiner Falefa, I mean, they've got good defenders. So I think it could make sense. I wouldn't, you know, bank on it to be a sure thing, but I think it's something they will definitely look into.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's always been questions because of his size and his height and everything else. Can he actually really legitimately play shortstop? And, of course, when you see him scoop the ball and throw a 110-mile-an-hour laser beam across the infield, or you see him stride and get to a ball that most guys probably wouldn't, you say, wow, I mean, yeah, he can play. He's, you know, he should play there. But
yeah.
But then he makes a lot of other plays that you say maybe he shouldn't play there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the athleticism, I feel like, is too superior for him to be playing first base, like some people have suggested. Like, I feel like that would be a total waste. But there's a spot somewhere for him in the field. Is it shortstop? I don't know. I mean, right now it is. He's their starting shortstop for the rest of the year. But in the offseason, like, I mean, that arm would look pretty good in right field, would it not? So I there's something there to it. It's just getting him to buy into that. And I'm not suggesting that today's version of O'Neill Cruz would be opposed to it or throw a fit about it. I'm just saying that, I mean, that's a big change to make in the middle of someone's career. And B, it's, do the Pirates want to do this? They have to look around and say, I mean, they just acquired a right fielder that's going to probably be the right fielder for the next three seasons. So where do you play him? Center field? Maybe. I don't know. But part of that would make sense.
Yeah, no question about it. And I said, you know, before you got on, though, I was talking with City Limits about it, and I said basically, you know what, the thing about baseball is 162 games, you know, they sort of even themselves out. You know, for lack of a better way of saying it, the baseball gods even things out. You know, we can point to a number of games where it felt like the Pirates stole a game.
Yeah.
And then you point to games like last night where they gave one away, which is why I always say 162 games that does not lie.
It doesn't. I mean, just look at this road stand. I mean, there were two games they absolutely stole, this road stand. The final game in Arizona and then their comeback win on Monday. Those are games that they probably should have lost. And then you have a game like yesterday where they definitely should have won. I mean, they allowed three unearned runs and a 5-4 loss. So that's baseball for you, though. There's plenty of other series that you can highlight. Now, if we're going to play that game, I still think there are probably more games this season that the Pirates should have won rather than wins that they should have lost. But nonetheless, like you said, I mean, 162-game sample size, that tells the truth. There is no fabrication there.
Right. That's the biggest thing. I see Brian De La Cruz with two hits last night. I know that makes the bosses happy because they just made a trade for him. You know, what do you think he brings to the table for the Pirates?
He brings a cleanup hitter. That's what this team's been missing. You know, when Nick Gonzalez has had a really good year, but he should not be batting cleanup for a team in the playoff hunt. He's just not that type of power bat that you need in the middle of your order. So bringing him in along with IKF, you bring in two bats that really even out the rest of your lineup. And so with De La Cruz having a career year, he's one home run shy of tying his career high right now. That's the guy that you want to be batting fourth, and he brings some pop. Now, this is a guy, he's not going to go 2-for-4 every game. This isn't a Tony Gwynn-type hitter. He's going to have a lot of games where he strikes out a lot, or, you know, he's going to have some series where he goes, you know, 1-for-12. But, like a traditional power hitter, there's going to be other series. There's going to be weeks where the guy's just painting the outfield seats with baseballs. So that's the type of player they kind of needed. I mean, obviously, you'd take a more consistently productive hitter than that. But for his price and his, you know, the years remaining on his contract, to get a guy that's going to be a consistent 20 to 30 home run hitter for a corner outfield spot, you'll take that. So I think that Pirate fans are going to like this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing. I think he, and the other part of it is no, I feel like when you put him in right and you have Reynolds in left, I mean, I'm okay with them rolling with Michael A. Taylor, especially since he swung the bat a lot better. If he hits, you know, a little better than he has for the rest of the way, I mean, I think that gives them a pretty good outfielder and a pretty good outfield.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, eventually I think they'll move Kiner Falefa to center field. whenever Gonzalez gets back. But for the short term, yeah, I mean, with Taylor, the defense is so good. The thing was, if he could just be an average bat or even slightly below average,
right?
That's a really good center fielder. They just haven't gotten that from him. But if this series indicates any type of turnaround for him, and if he can hit, you know, 10 home runs in the second half, that is more than ideal for this
right.
team with the defense that he provides.
There's no question. You brought up Kiner Falefa. Where do you feel like he's going to eventually fit in with the Pirates?
I think this is a guy that's maybe not going to have one definitive spot. He's a guy that'll probably start 5 games a week, and it'll probably be at 4 different positions. If I had to say a main spot for him, it'd be second base right now. But this is a guy who can play above average defense at every spot on the field. So you'll see him give Ke'Bryan a couple days off at third base. You'll see him start at short when O'Neill needs a day off. You could see him at any of the 3 outfield positions. And like I said, second base makes sense with Nick Gonzalez out right now. So he's kind of similar, to make a Pittsburgh comparison, kind of like Josh Harrison in that last time that this team was competitive, where you'd see Harrison at third one day, you'd see Harrison at second one day, you'd see him in left field occasionally or right field. Like, that's this type of player, and he's a better defender. So this is a very valuable player where he's going to provide you above average defense, and he's hitting .292. So he's got a decent bat on him as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always, you know, the key. Is I think that he's a guy that is going to help them get better offensively, and that's really what the goal of the trade deadline was. Is there any scenario where he becomes the second baseman if Nick Gonzalez doesn't turn, you know, start hitting a little better than he has?
I mean, maybe. I think Nick Gonzalez was good enough at second base where he deserves for that to be his position once he returns. And because IKF is so versatile defensively, you can find another spot for him. But, I mean, if Gonzalez doesn't perform, then sure, that second base will, most of those second base reps could go to Kiner Falefa. So it'll be interesting because I feel like Shelton is a guy who he's even vocalized this. He really, really likes defensive versatility. He likes being able to mix and match lineups. And having that guy that he can put any spot in the batting order, any spot in the field, that's very valuable to him.
Right. There's no question. Pitching-wise, do we have any idea when Jared Jones is back?
I would say August 1st. I'd give him a couple more weeks. So he just threw his second bullpen here in Houston. He's going to return home with the team, and he'll throw a simulated batting practice sometime this weekend at PNC Park. After that, they'll determine if he needs to throw another one or if that's good enough for him to begin a rehab assignment. And then the rehab assignment, I think because he's missed so much time, he'll probably throw twice in the minor leagues, and then he'll be good to go. So I think Jared is right on the same track that they had said he'd be on, that mid-August was their target date, and he'll be back right in time for that.
I would say that if they get him back, you know, I think that now all of a sudden if they can, but they need to be within a game or two, right? I mean, they've got to stay at least where they're at. They can't really give up much more ground, or else him coming back might not be relevant.
No, but I mean, you look at their next games on the schedule, how they open August. I mean, if they keep winning series, they're gonna clock even closer into this thing. Because they've got 3 this weekend against San Diego, or 3 this weekend against Arizona. Then they play 3 more at home against San Diego. They go on the road for 6 games, where they got the Dodgers for 3, and then 3 more against the Padres. So 9 games right now are 9 of your next 12 games are against opponents that are in the wild card mix. There are 6 teams fighting for these 3 wild card spots, and the Pirates are playing 2 of them for 9 of their next 12 games. So if they can keep winning series, their position's going to be even more favorable.
Yeah. Well, again, I think that's the key. You've got to keep winning series and just trying to win as many games as you possibly can. Like I said, last week, everybody was ready to crown them because they took two or three from the Cardinals. Well, as we wake up today, I look at the standings. They're a game behind the Cardinals. So you got to keep winning. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's really what it comes down to. Well, Noah, I appreciate you jumping on. I know you got to catch a flight, and I will probably see you at the ballpark this weekend.
All right. I'll see you there, Paul.
All right, buddy. That's Noah House. Does a great job covering it for the Pirates for the Post-Gazette. And so there's that. I mean, I don't know, Austin. I feel like the Jared Jones situation, the longer it lingers, man, the more it starts to hurt them.
Yeah, I heard originally that he would probably have to make about four rehab appearances before they would feel comfortable bringing him up. Now, is that going to be in, you know, pitch one day and then another 5 days? Is it going to be just bullpens included? So the fact that he is probably not going to come back until the end of August, I would think. Maybe, probably not the middle, probably the latter portion of August. I mean, it's concerning. The fact that he is not back yet. It's been, what, a month plus?
Yeah.
He was out before the All-Star break. So, yeah, I mean, obviously that's a guy that you need to have back, but pitching still, I don't think is their problem.
Well, it isn't, but my point is, boy, you like to have your whole arsenal.
Bro, oh, no doubt about it.
Especially when you're chasing and you're, you know, going to be in a dogfight the rest of the way. It'd be nice to have all of your best guys. We've got Brian Bacco from training camp, right, coming up. All right, we're going to do that next. Oh, all right, we're going to do that next. It's 93.7 The Fan.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Off the Top was presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia. Peters Township, visit them at southhillskia.net, and also the Fan Hotline. Presented by Super Sullivan Service, Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. And of course, as always, the Fan Text Line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. 412-928-9370, that is the Fan text line. And of course, our Pirates reaction was brought to you by Bet365. Let's go to the phone lines right now, however, and go to Latrobe and talk to our good friend Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette, who's covering the Steelers. And Brian, what is the daily story of the quarterback?
Well, I will have a better answer for you in a few minutes, Paul. I'm walking up to practice right now. They are probably getting ready to do some of their individual drills, some of the stretching. Obviously, so far, all we've seen from Russell Wilson is, you know, the 7-on-7 he's throwing, and when they go to 11-on-11 and it's going to be a run play, they sometimes let him get in there, take the snap, hand it off to Najee Harris or Jalen Warren, and get out of the way. So still pretty much a holding pattern for Russ, but at least he's doing a little bit more day by day, incremental steps forward for him.
Yeah, well, is the story of the blocking sled true? Is that how he hurt his calf?
Yeah. I mean, he said that himself, and you know, the new strength and conditioning staff, I don't know, maybe a little bit overzealous. You know, they're not really in position to tell their side of the story ever. Steelers don't have those folks do interviews, the support staffers and whatnot. But, yeah, I don't know if that was them being overzealous, maybe Russ being overzealous, maybe a combination. But weird way to start his Steelers tenure for sure.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just a strange thing, man. He's, you know, he's – you know, if he was like a 10-year vet here, or if he was in this offense for a couple of years, and again, he knows, I mean, he's played enough football, he knows what's going on, but when you have a new quarterback and a new coordinator and a couple of new pieces, you kind of would like them to get as many reps together as possible, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that to me is the sort of hypocritical thing about all of it, is Mike Tomlin, after every practice, is saying, oh, well, we're being very cautious with him and careful. We're afforded time to do that. But the next day, if he's talking about somebody else missing practice, a young guy, it's, hey, we only have so many days to do this. We only have so many opportunities for these guys to get up to speed. So, yeah, I mean, it's a fine line. It's a balance as far as that goes. Now, August 1st, if you're into sort of arbitrary dates for when the going gets tough at camp, but yeah, it'd be nice to see him get out there and get some more continuity and live reps with his teammates.
Well, I mean, it's still very early, but by the same token, isn't the first game of the season tonight? Not for the Steelers.
The Hall of Fame game. Yeah, the Hall of Fame game is tonight between the Texans and the Bears.
Right. So, you know, I mean, it means that we're starting to get down to where teams are going to start to play against other people.
And, Paul, I got a little bit of breaking news for you.
Okay.
Steelers have re-signed linebacker Marcus Golden to a one-year contract.
Oh,
what do you think of that, Brian?
City Limit. Thank you. I'm on the phone with you guys. I didn't see that. Not too surprising, because just literally 5-10 minutes ago in my Post-Gazette chat, somebody, I think it was the last question, actually, someone said, who's going to be the fourth outside linebacker? And I said, right now, probably Kyron Johnson, but he got dinged up yesterday to an unknown degree. Jeremiah Moon, you know, looks the part, and he's a former Ravens cast off. And I said it could also be somebody who's not on the roster just yet. And Marcus Golden, not on the roster until right now. So I guess they weren't feeling great about those options at the number four role. I think it's more of an indictment of those guys than it is second-year pass rusher Nick Herbig.
Now, Brian, do you think that this might be, I mean, obviously not the same type of situation and scenario, but could lead the way for Patrick Peterson to potentially return as well, depending on what happens with the corners?
Oh, man. That one, I don't think so. I mean, I just think that they could have already gone down that road. I think they actually have more depth there than they do at outside linebacker, at least in terms of, you know, different body types, NFL experience, younger guys. To me, Austin, if you were going to add another corner at this stage of the game, I think it would make more sense to get somebody who's actually played a lot of NFL reps at that inside position, because that's where you're weakest with Cam Sutton suspended, Beanie Bishop undrafted, trying to learn the ropes. You know, Grayland Arnold is sort of just right now he's trying to make plays, but he's a journeyman. So I think it would actually make more sense to get somebody with a little bit more bona fide at that position, even if it's obviously not as big a name as Patrick Peterson.
Yeah, and I think that's Brian, that's the thing. They've done a pretty good job of over the years finding, you know, those kind of guys throughout camp or even at the end of camp, right? I mean, just wait for teams to start cutting guys.
Yeah, and even within their own ranks, Paul, as you know, I mean, they've they were really on the money with Mike Hilton's evaluation once upon a time, and he was an undrafted, off the scrap heap type of dude, but they got him in camp, got a long look at him, liked his demeanor, liked his aggressive nature and physical play as a nickel corner. And that kind of seems like a philosophy for them in this defense, is like with that specific role, even though it's very important, it's a starter, so it's a significant job in today's NFL, with as much as the Steelers and every team plays nickel and even dime defense. You know, it doesn't seem like they want to invest a lot in that player, but they more so just want to find somebody with that underdog makeup mentality and chip on their shoulder. So they tend to get a lot of undrafted free agents, fifth, sixth, seventh round picks who pan out there. It's kind of an interesting wrinkle with the way the Steelers have built their roster, and obviously now they're trying to do it again with Beanie Bishop.
93.7 The Fan is your station for complete training camp coverage, presented by Smail Kia and brought to you by Guardian Caps and Armstrong Business Solutions. We're talking to Brian Bacco, the Post-Gazette. Brian, the flip side of the quarterback thing is Justin Fields. You've seen a lot of him. Obviously, most of it has been, you know, football in T-shirt and shorts. But, I don't know, what are your observations?
I mean, there's been highs and lows. And to me, I'm a little bit more encouraged by the highs than I am discouraged by the lows with Fields. I mean, he's somebody that you probably take it with a grain of salt until you get back into the more meaningful opportunities, whether it's, you know, regular season. We don't know if he's going to get that chance, at least right now in 2024. But even the preseason, when there's a little bit more pressure on you, you're in a live setting where the other team can hit you, take you down, strip the ball, pick you off more than the Steelers Steelers teammates have done thus far. Though we know the little love tap from Landon Roberts yesterday sparked a nice little fracas. So, you know, I think there's been some good, and you know, it's a positive development for me so far. I think he's looked better in this training camp than from what I saw out of him in OTAs and minicamp back on the south side a couple months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that everybody – he's got so much potential, and he's got so many, you know, God-given natural ability and all that other stuff that people sort of are really intrigued by the idea of him, aren't they?
It's hard to quit a guy like that, Paul. I mean, at any level, really, of professional sports, and, I mean, even trickle down to college sports, the 4- and 5-star recruits, they get more chances than the undersized 2- and 3-star recruits, because there's always going to be another coach out there or another scout out there who sees all the physical tools and says, yeah, I can bring the best out of this guy. I can make it click for him. So, I mean, that's not always the fairest way to divvy up, you know, jobs around the NFL or whatever, but it's not about fair. It's about, you know, pedigree. A lot of the times, the raw talent can't teach the size, can't teach the speed. He's put that on display here and there at St. Vincent, but again, going to be a lot more intrigued to see what he does in the preseason. I sure hope the Steelers give him quite a bit of reps, because I think he does need that environment to take that next step forward.
Apparently, according to Mike DeFabo 1 minute ago, Justin Fields again took all the first team reps in this initial segment of practice. That's not exactly what we wanted to hear, is it?
Well, yeah, and it could be setting the stage. I mean, maybe Russell Wilson's first, you know, full practice, such as it is this time of year, will be the Friday Night Lights session tomorrow night at Latrobe Memorial Stadium. That's usually when the intensity gets ratcheted up a little bit more. I'd say the two most physical days generally of camp are that first practice in pads, which we had on Tuesday, and then Friday Night Lights, where it's, you know, the bigger crowd, the fans are kind of right on top of you, and, you know, it does try to simulate the game atmosphere a little bit more in these early days of training camp practice. So, yeah, and hey, I think every day that this lingers on for Russ, the calf, there's going to be people skeptical. Hey, is this worse than they're letting on? Is Mike Tomlin being less than truthful and transparent again with an injury to a star player, much like the Najee Harris issue a couple years ago that ended up being a lisfranc? Mike Tomlin did not give us really any indication at the beginning that that's what it was. We know it hampered him for a while, and you just hope that's not going to be the same deal with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think that's the key. there. Roman Wilson out for a couple of weeks or whatever. That's a little bit of a setback for a rookie, right? I mean, this is the time where you're trying to learn everything and sort of make your way. I mean, I guess the hope is that it's not more than a week or two.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to get that week-to-week characterization slapped on anybody, but especially a rookie who's trying to learn the offense, trying to kind of adjust to the speed, the physicality of the NFL game. I mean, he did a really good job of getting open and making big plays, being explosive. In Michigan's offense, Big Ten's got good defenses, but he also had some of the best players around him, obviously the best team in college football around him. Now it's a different kind of learning curve up here. I thought he got off to a slow start in those closed practices of OTAs and in minicamp, but I thought he was maybe turning a corner out here at St. Vincent College. So, yeah, it's hard not to think back to Calvin Austin III's rookie year when he went down with a foot injury right before the first preseason game. So we never got to see him translate the practice field work to the real deal in stadium. And obviously in the end, he had another setback and missed his entire rookie year on IR. Way too early to speculate like anything like that will happen for Roman Wilson. But, second time in 3 years, a bad luck injury for a young receiver.
That is really tough. So how is that position, because it's an important position, how is it all shaping up right now?
I'll say this much. I think the Van Jefferson and Calvin Austin sort of coupling of maybe the two and three right now have had some really good moments in camp. I haven't seen as much competition from the guys behind them that I was expecting. Quez Watkins from Philly hasn't stood out much to me. Scotty Miller, Dez Fitzpatrick, none of them are really doing a whole lot from what I've observed. So, I mean, there's still going to be the people out there who just no name on this receiver depth chart is going to satisfy them as long as Brandon Ayuk is kind of sort of dangling and available from San Francisco. But I mean, I liked what I've seen from Van Jefferson. I think they're going to take a committee approach to that number two receiver role. For instance, Van Jefferson, might get the second most snaps of any receiver on this team behind George Pickens, but Calvin Austin might run get targeted on a higher percentage of his snaps. So it's going to be divvied up. It's not going to be the traditional 1-2 that the Steelers have had to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be the key. One guy that people have talked a lot about is Peyton Wilson. Apparently, he's quite often the first guy out on the field, last guy to leave, all that other stuff. He has a chance to have an impact this year, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, everything you heard about him coming out of college, everything you could see about him on film at NC State, I think you're seeing that show up here as well. I mean, just he's really active. He always seems to be around the ball. He plays super hard. He's got a nose for it. And, I mean, his teammates couldn't be, praising him more. And sometimes us reporters sort of, lead them in those directions. It's nice to have the strong quotes from people. But even assuming that they're not going to say anything too negative about a teammate, especially a rookie, I feel like they've gone above and beyond to talk about how mature he is, his approach to the game, how much he loves it, how hard he works, how relentless he is. All of these are really good signs for somebody who I think is going to have some kind of role as a rookie, even if it's sub-package, situational-type deal at linebacker.
Yes, 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler. Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Also, listen to Starkey Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle and Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m., 93.7thefan.com. Contesting page. Brian, we've heard a lot about and we've read a lot about all of these tight ends are really, really happy in this offense, and everything is going to be great for the tight end position in this offense. Have you observed this?
Yeah, I think it will be much improved. I mean, Pat Freiermuth is getting as many targets as I can ever remember him getting in practice. And, I think that's partially due to the scheme that Arthur Smith is known to have philosophically. I think it's partially due to the quarterbacks always trusting that if they put it anywhere in his vicinity, more often than not, he's going to come down with that catch somehow, or maybe draw an interference penalty, which we know is not always adjudicated this time of year when you're practicing against each other. But, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to run a ton of 12 personnel. We've even seen a lot of three tight ends. It's, you know, Connor Hayward being kind of the hybrid player that he is, sort of half tight end, half H-back. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's very much going to be a part of their identity. And that, too, to me, lessens the need for that traditional top two wide receivers, you know, 1A and 1B. No, I think they want to kind of streamline the looks to George Pickens, the role allocation among both of those position groups. It's going to come into focus if Pickens and Freiermuth are both healthy on top of your 1-2 punch in the backfield.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that I've read a lot about all these tight ends and how much they love the offense and how different it is. Have you guys had a bunch of chances to talk to Arthur Smith, and what are your thoughts on him?
No, not yet this camp. I actually think he might be doing an interview after today's practice. So if there's anything you want to know, Paul, just text me. Maybe I can pass that along to Arthur.
Yes. Was Arthur Smith the coach of the 28-3 debacle?
No. That was it? Mike
Smith,
it
all runs together for me. I was going to say you could ask him about that.
No, Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator for those Falcons. And, I mean, it's turned out all right for him. Granted, the Super Bowl still eludes him, but probably the best offensive mind in the game right now, if it's not Andy Reid.
Yeah, no, I'm just teasing. That's right. It was the other. What was the guy's name?
Was it Mike Smith?
Was it the Commanders? He's now the Commanders coach, isn't he?
Dan Quinn.
Dan Quinn, wasn't he the head coach of the Falcons when they had the 28-3 debacle?
You might be right about that. Yeah.
Dan Quinn.
Yes.
Thank you, Austin. So, yeah, he was there. Yeah, he was there for a while, actually.
Yeah. So that I guess we can't. But I do. I'm very interested in who the other receiver is. And I'm also interested in whether or not they're going to do the, you know, package that everybody wants them to put a package in for Justin Fields. The problem with that, Brian, and I've said this a number of times, is he's your backup. So if you have a package for him and he gets hurt, you're in a bad way because your backup is now out. Just, you know what I mean? It's different, I think, than if you've got a guy like Taysom Hill where they had another, you know, they had a different backup quarterback. You can get away with that kind of stuff, but I don't know. Am I wrong about that?
I just wrote all that down verbatim. I'm going to pass it to Arthur Smith. Say, hey, this is from Paul Zeiss, 93.7 The Fan and the Post-Gazette. He wanted to ask you these couple things. I'm standing in for him. But, no, I mean, I think I'm still a little skeptical that there is going to be a package for Fields. That's never really been something the Steelers have done, even when they've had more mobile quarterbacks behind Ben Roethlisberger. To me, I mean, as long as this calf problem is not going to linger or not worse than we are sort of hearing, then, you know, Russell Wilson should still have a good amount of mobility to his own self that you can utilize in those short yardage or red zone situations. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know about that, but it is obvious when you watch Fields out here, the first step that he has, the burst, the long strides, I mean, you can see why he's ripped off so many long runs for the Bears over the last few years and why you're even starting to hear more NFL analysts say he actually might be the best running quarterback in the NFL, even ahead of Lamar Jackson these days.
Yeah, that's the thing about it is he's got such a skill set. It's really hard for me, you know, in many ways, it's really hard for me to imagine that they're not going to try and use him in some ways, but I also think it's really difficult. It's really difficult to put him out there a lot because he is your backup quarterback.
Yeah, he'd be coming in cold off the sideline in those scenarios. So how much are you really trusting him to throw the ball? You got to figure the defense would take that same approach as well.
Right. So we'll have to see what happens here. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be very, very interesting just to kind of see how they sort of use him and mix him in. Last one, I'll let you go, Brian. The annual let's let the veterans have days off and all that, has that begun yet?
Oh yeah, Isaac Seumalo's already had a couple days off. Cam Hayward and TJ Watt might be at two each as well. So Minka Fitzpatrick was off yesterday. I mean, yeah, it's all giving opportunities to the younger guys as well, making sure nobody goes down. And yesterday with that melee, it was a good thing probably that the most valuable defensive Steelers weren't really anywhere near the play other than Patrick Queen might have found his way in there. Joey Porter Jr., I think, lost his mind momentarily and threw a punch at a teammate. So that at least spiced up training camp. That might have been the best skirmish since I've been covering the team in 2019.
Well, Brian, hopefully you get treated to some more theater today to make your day go faster.
Thank you. We'll see you guys.
All right, brother. That is Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy. Visit Sun Chevrolet, Washington Road, McMurray, or at sunchevy.com. High of 91 today, sunny skies. City Limits, am I the only one that seems to be concerned about the fact that if you put a package together for Justin Fields, you're essentially putting your backup quarterback out there and risking him getting hurt?
No, I 100% understand the reasoning. I also think that you can't live in a fear bear, and I know one play can change everything, but you can't be so afraid that Justin Fields will get hurt. I mean, they even thought about putting him, maybe even if it was just a split second, on kickoff returns. Maybe that was just a flabbergasted idea from Danny Smith. But at the same time, you can create a package for Fields and not use him, or you can use him once or twice. I think the difference is that they're not throwing him out there 7, 8, 9, 10 plays a game. You're only talking about, you know, two or three plays to probably spice it up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, again, and there are some plays that they could use with him where maybe he wouldn't be in that much of harm's way, right? Because you got to figure they're going to do some throwbacks to him, and you know he'll throw it, or
right,
you know, some different kinds of actions where they're trying to get him out into open space so that he can run and use his legs, and you know,
and so they're not going to put him in positions where he takes unnecessary hits either. And I don't think he'll put himself in that type of position either.
Right. I just think that is one important distinction for me when people talk about putting a package in. You've got to be very, very, very careful. Very careful about putting your backup quarterback out there, because if he gets hurt, then you're in a little bit of a pickle. By the way, Austin, the Humane Society apparently came yesterday.
Did they? Did they help the fox?
It was a fox, not a coyote.
It was a fox. You know, the funny thing is, Paul, I went and picked up my car. It was getting worked on yesterday. And the first thing that was asked to me when I got there, it was great. Did Paul ever get to help the coyote?
Yeah.
Well, people were genuinely concerned for the coyote. I was very happy our listeners were concerned.
A lot of people were, and you know, when you looked at it, you know, from where I was standing and the photo I took, it absolutely looks like a coyote.
I thought it was a coyote.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So either way, I mean, it's a fox, and if it's limping around like that, you know, it was all mangy and limping around like that, I can't imagine it was healthy.
Right.
Which makes it just equally as, you know, I don't want to say dangerous, but if someone got too close to it and it bit them, who knows? I mean, you can't have...
You don't want the fox getting hit either, or right, anything bad to happen.
Exactly. You want to get him safe. So apparently, from what I'm told, either the Humane Society or one of these, you know, groups like that came and took care of
When you say take care of the fox, did they help the fox, or did they do the unexplainable and unspeakable?
I didn't ask. I was just told they came and took care of
business. That's always my fear when I hear something about that. Don't right. hurt the fox.
No, I get it.
Be humane.
I get
Don't
it.
Don't hurt them.
But I get it, but some of them have to be put down because either they're rabid or whatever. Or maybe in this one's case, you know, it was limping around. It was seriously injured. It really
was. That's why you help them and nurse them back to health.
Yeah. So anyway, I did my duty. You know, the first half hour of the show, I was very concerned about the well-being of the coyote.
I'm still concerned. We need a wellness check.
Yeah, we need a wellness check.
Just to make sure that this coyote fox is alive.
Here's the thing, and this is what, you know, there have been a number of coyote sightings in this parking lot, including one by me when I worked one night. I used to work late night, right?
Yeah.
I used to work after the Pirates. And I walked out, you know, I was done maybe 2 in the morning. And they're walking across. I was like, oh, there's a dog walking. What is going on here? And then I looked, and then it kind of like walked sort of like right down here, you know? And I slowly but surely backed up and got back into the building because I could tell.
It wasn't a dog.
It was definitely a coyote. And then so I said something to the, you know, whoever was in charge at the time here. And they got in touch with the building management people or whatever. And sure enough, we got an email from Foster Plaza, you know, or whatever. They were saying, hey, listen, you know, we've had another coyote sighting, and there's been a few. And I know Paul Rasmussen, you know, the news guy over on KDK, he's seen them on multiple occasions walking across the road when he's coming to work in the middle of the night or whatever. So,
well, he gets here at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one reason why when I saw him, the fox yesterday, and I was looking at it, I was like, boy, that is a coyote, I think. That really looks like a coyote, but it was a fox. And I don't know. I mean,
which means there's a family of foxes or coyotes just hanging around Foster Plaza. Yeah, not a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's really the reality of it, if you think about it.
Take them out to, you know, the middle of the woods somewhere. They don't belong here in the plaza. It's dangerous for them in the plaza. But it's like when I see deer trying to cross the parkway, like, what the hell's going on here?
Right, exactly. By the same token, in their defense, and I don't want to sound like I'm some, you know, super PETA person or something. But in their defense, we've built a lot of things and taken away a lot of woods areas, and you know what I mean, areas where they live or where they would live. Like for instance, right up around North Park, my cousin lives up there. They've built so many homes right around North Park, right? You know, I was sitting the other night on his porch, and literally like 10 deer just kind of walked by looking for trees to eat or whatever, because there's nowhere for them to go.
I saw a deer this morning in my backyard running around. We have a lot of land, but still, they like to frequent our backyard.
And that's why you also see an uptick in bear sightings, because we're taking away forests and taking away, you know, woods areas, and we're taking away, you know what I'm saying?
Bring back the forest.
And we're building housing plans and strip malls and, you know, whatever. And they just, there's not that many places to go, you know? And that's why, like, I don't litter at all. But the one thing I will throw out my car window is, like, if I eat an apple, you know, the core of the apple or something, just because there's animals out there searching for food.
Yeah, they could eat that.
They're starving and searching for food.
Don't throw your gum out the window.
No.
That hurts the animals.
I don't chew gum.
I have a problem when people do that.
I don't chew gum.
I yell at them.
No, I don't chew gum.
When I see somebody in the car do that a couple times.
I don't chew gum. But if I have an apple or a pear, you know what I mean, I'll throw the core out there, because it's something that animals, and they're all searching for something to eat.
Right.
You know, so in their defense, we're making it more and more difficult for them to, we're making it more and more difficult for them to have a place to live.
Before we go to the break that we are kind of late for, we have a message from Andrew Lindbergh.
Paul, I actually did a report on littering in college, and one of the things that I thought was okay was to throw things like apples and stuff like that out the window. They say not to because it'll attract deer closer to the roads, making it likely to hit them. So just little PSA.
Yes,
now,
PSA.
Andrew, do we have an update on the fox? Do you know anything about the fox?
No, I hope it's not dead.
There we go.
That's the sentiment of all of us.
Now I got to think. I got to rethink it. But of course, you know what? I throw it far enough away from the road, I don't feel.
Yeah, throw it deep into the woods.
Right? I throw it deep.
Throw a 70-yard spiral into the woods.
All right, we're up against it. We got to get to it. It's 93.7 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.